Hello, and welcome to the audio edition of Beastly Business, the first in a series of animal behavior, human-animal bond mysteries, written and read by Myrna Milani. Chapter 14. By the time I arrived home following the great goat escapade, I easily would have qualified for the centerfold of the Journal of American Waste Products, if such a publication existed. I dragged my goat-battered body out of my goat-battered car, wanting nothing more than to ditch those wretched clothes, take a shower, and put on something clean and comfortable that didn't make me look and feel like an animated pile of middle-aged manure. So badly did I reek, I began shedding my clothes outdoors, a task I'd barely begun when a vehicle came up the driveway. My goodness, this should be interesting, the insane center of my brain babbled as I stood in my blouse, undies, and sandals, watching Jeff Weintraub get out of his car. Where's the goat? Given my appearance, his question so stunned me, I answered, What goat? The one you stole from me. The fact that he somehow knew I'd taken the goat compounded my surprise, to the point that he easily grabbed my arm before I had time to resist. I said, Where's the goat? He repeated in a casual tone I found highly disconcerting under the circumstances. I'm sorry, I don't know what goat you're talking about, I replied. In a manner, I prayed made it clear that he'd interrupted some half-naked New Hampshire garden fertilizing ritual. You do know, he dragged me toward the house, and you're going to tell me. Because he continued using that same, almost conversational tone, I found myself thinking the most bizarre thoughts. I wonder how he knows I took the goat. Footprints? Fingerprints? He works a transgen, you idiot. He probably knows how to test the air for DNA fragments. You dropped this. Weintraub held up one of my business cards, and I suddenly recalled trying to use it to scoop up an incriminating pile of evidence that 199 deposited when I heaved her into my car. Now I knew why I had no memory of picking up the card and taking it with me. I'd forgotten all about it. Probably when the goat stepped on my foot. By the time I processed that, Weintraub had dragged me into the house, and I heard myself offering him a cup of tea, a knee-jerk response rather than an expression of hospitality. Like any responsible pet owner, I also automatically gave the dogs the downstay command when he glanced at them nervously. My seemingly casual behavior appeared to disorient him as much as his disoriented me. "Where's the goat?" he repeated yet again, now sounding much more nervous than casual. It struck me that Jeff Weintraub really didn't want to hurt me any more than I wanted to be hurt. This gave me hope that maybe we could work something out. How about we work out a deal? I proposed. What kind of a deal? I tossed a couple of tea bags into the teapot and filled it with hot water. When I noticed Bloodbath in Barcelona on the kitchen table, where it flattened a particularly nice violet worthy of drying, fleeting images of dousing Weintraub with boiling water or poisoning him came to mind. But even if I could bring myself to do such a thing, I doubted he'd stand idly by while I poured hot herbal tea on him, any more than he'd sit still while I filled him up with environmentally friendly dish detergent and bubbled him into submission, the only other possible weapon I could think of offhand. Instead, I filled two cups with tea and handed one to him. "You tell me why you want the goat, and I'll tell you where she is," I lied boldly. "I'm holding her for ransom," he practically boasted. At first it surprised me that he'd admit that so readily, but then I decided it fit. Surely such a self-proclaimed stud would want to share his achievements with a woman, no matter how marginal my current claim to that status. Who'd pay money to get a goat back? Some people who know a lot more about that goat than you do. The patronizing look he gave me as he leaned against my kitchen counter so irritated me, I was about to resurrect the scrap dish detergent plan when he continued. I know how it is with you animal rights people, but you've got it all wrong this time. He leered at me indulgently. That goat gets the best of care, and always will. I gawked at him as I struggled to come to grips with this unexpected turn of events. I really think you and I can work this out. Jeff Weintraub suddenly put down his cup and moved purposefully toward me, wearing a salacious grin that made me want to vomit. Where's the bedroom, babe? You know you want me. Want him? Yeah, right. Just like I've always wanted a lichen-encrusted hemorrhoid. Desperate times call for desperate measures. So in desperation, I shrieked, Attack! Instantly, Teresa and Elizabeth sprang to their feet and hurled themselves at Weintraub, who instinctively threw up his arms to protect himself while leaping away from the lunging canines. When he did, he hit the kitchen table, staggered, and fell over a chair. While the dogs licked him, I grabbed the frying pan from the sink and hit him on the head with it. I was trying to tie him up with an assortment of dog leashes when McCarthy opened the door. I'm sorry to intrude. I came by to get my He stopped dead and stared at Weintraub's egg-spattered body. Oh, good. You can help me. I yanked him into the house. I was never very good at knots. Do I want to know what's going on here? McCarthy asked, after meticulously surveying the crime scene. Weintraub stole the goat and planned to hold her for ransom, I reported semi-calmly, as I checked the goat napper's pulse for the 10th time in 2 minutes to assure myself I hadn't killed him. What did you do to him? My crazy partner seemed as disoriented by the situation as I was. I hit him on the head with a frying pan. I pointed to the weapon on the floor, from which the pets licked the remnants of my breakfast. He let you hit him on the head with a frying pan? McCarthy's expression reminded me of one worn by a Himalayan cat I'd once treated after she accidentally took a few spins in a clothes dryer. No, I told the dogs to attack him, and while they did, I picked up the pan and hit him with it. The meticulous mystery writer looked incredulously at Elizabeth and Teresa, who had abandoned the now egg-free frying pan in favor of the still egg-spattered floor and victim. "Those dogs are trained to attack?" he croaked in surprise. "No," I sighed, reclaiming the frying pan and filling it with scalding water and dish detergent. The boys taught them to jump up and lick people on the attack command as a joke. It was the only thing I could think of to distract Weintraub long enough to hit him. I checked the recumbent man's pulse again and felt exceedingly relieved when he moaned. What will the police do? I gave McCarthy my best. There's no need for me to be in on this part of it, is there? Look. I imagine they might have a few questions for you and Weintraub, he replied dryly. You might want to clean yourself up and put some clothes on while I call them. By the time I showered and put on a socially responsible white organic cotton shirt and tan twill slacks, the police were just arriving. After that, events took on an even more surrealistic quality. 2 state troopers ensconced themselves in my living room with McCarthy and Jeff Weintraub, who now held his head in his hands. One of the troopers, a massive man whose dog, a friendly black lab named Igor, I treated for a cut footpad years ago, addressed me by name and introduced his much smaller colleague. I'm sorry to report that I missed a partner's name because I was trying so hard to remember Igor's owner's name, a not uncommon problem of mine. Rather than risk antagonizing the former client turned formidable law enforcement officer, I nodded respectfully. Although the troopers initially treated all of us with professional neutrality, when they noticed Elizabeth noisily snarfing some egg off Bloodbath in Barcelona, which apparently had flown off the table during the scuffle, and made the connection between it and McCarthy. Their attitude toward him warmed considerably. When he told them about the goat that Weintraub had stolen from Transgen and that I'd found it, they hung on his every word. "Where did you find it?" the little trooper asked me. "I found it, her, in an old pound in the woods, behind the cottage Mr. Weintraub is renting." I couldn't help scowling at Weintraub and adding, "They're social animals, you know. They don't like being alone." "You stupid bitch," he screamed at me. "I told you she gets good care. I was just going to hold her for ransom." He shook his fist at me angrily. "I wouldn't have sold her unless they wouldn't pay my price."
"Maybe you better tell us the whole story, Mr. Weintraub." Trooper Igor's quiet voice interrupted Weintraub's tirade.
Weintraub then described how, after he had learned that his days at Transgen were numbered, he had deliberately seduced Monica's uncle on the sly and conned her into renting the cottage so he could hide the goat there. He wanted the animal close enough to keep tabs on, but not at his own place in case someone suspected the theft was an inside job and decided to check on him. On the other hand, he felt confident that both Monica's timid personality and her spotless work record would make her the last person anyone would suspect. "Were you with Monica Sanko when she died?" McCarthy's question surprised me, but not as much as it did Jeff Weintraub. He turned dead white and shook his head vigorously. "No. I stopped in to check on the goat and found her body and Harley freaking out. I was going to report it, honest." He begged McCarthy and the officers to believe him. "But while I was moving the goat to my place, the meter reader showed up."
"So you never went back to the cottage?" McCarthy asked while I held my breath and tried to figure out what he was up to.
My part-time partner gave Weintraub the stare treatment, and he crumbled immediately.
"I went back the next day," he admitted sullenly. "Why?"
"I wanted to make sure I'd cleaned up everything in the laundry room where I'd kept the goat," he explained, wringing his hands. "At first, I thought whoever killed Monica planned to steal the goat, and that it scared them off. But then, when everyone said the dog killed her, that left me in the clear, as long as I didn't overlook anything in the cottage."
"So did you find anything in the cottage when you went back the second time?" Trooper Igor asked.
"I didn't have time to look. She," he shot me a venomous look, "showed up right after I got there." I immediately imagined the very large can of worms that answer could open and scrambled to keep it shut, particularly when the two officers turned to look at me suspiciously. I'd promised Joe Talbot I'd pick up and clean a handmade rug that had sentimental value for his wife, I semi-lied. I didn't think that was a problem because the police hadn't cordoned off the place and, according to Joe, had even recommended a professional service to clean everything else. I took advantage of the lull that occurred while the two troopers pondered that to try to glean a few nuggets of information myself. "Mr. Weintraub," I appropriated Trooper Igor's official interrogation tone to address the goat napper, "you said you initially thought someone had killed Monica. Why didn't you think the dog did it?"
"According to the article in the paper, he had her blood all over him."
"I know he did. But I thought it was just because he kept pawing at her body and whining and nosing her." Weintraub closed his eyes and took several deep breaths before continuing. "Old Harley could be pretty pushy, but I never thought he'd do something like that to her."
"You never saw him go after anyone?"
"No." Weintraub shifted uncomfortably on the couch.
"Tell the truth, Mr. Weintraub. It will go much easier on you if you do."
I repeated the line I'd heard in a million cop movies while simultaneously disregarding McCarthy's increasingly invasive subliminal messages to shut up and let him handle it. Weintraub looked at Trooper Igor, who looked at me oddly, but then ordered the prisoner, "Answer the question." "The night before, when I brought the goat up from the lab, the dog went after her when I let her out of the car.
Weintraub replied as directed, but I wanted more.
You think he meant to hurt her?
I focused my attention entirely on him to ensure I got it.
No.
He shook his head slowly. She was pretty groggy from the xylazine, and I think that spooked him. He took a little chunk out of her when she started eating the flowers.
You didn't have any trouble getting him away from her?
I continued my interrogation in an attempt to confirm the source of the human blood I'd found in the flower bed. Jeff Weintraub held up his bandaged hand and grinned sickly.
He nailed me pretty good, but it was my own fault. I was so worried about the goat taking off that I wasn't paying any attention when I grabbed him.
He rubbed his wounded head gingerly with his wounded hand.
Still, it's hard to imagine him attacking Monica like that.
He looked at me, and then at the two dogs sleeping peacefully at my feet.
But I guess you never know, do you?
You've been listening to an excerpt from Beastly Business, an animal behavior and human-animal bond mystery written by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, books on animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavioral and bond sites, check out my website at mm@mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the book Beastly Business in any form are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music in The Steppes of Central Asia by Alexander Bordin is used with permission of Katova Arts, www.katova.com.